This message is brought to you by Cornerstone Gospel Church in Frankston, Australia.
This testimony is going to be perhaps a little different than most. I've put quite a lot of thought into it. For those who know me, my thinking too much is no surprise, really. The reason I've thought so much about my testimony is because I've been asked so many times to give it, but I've always struggled to do so. I think this is because, like all people, I am a complex person. And given that I've only been a Christian for about 5 years, the journey that I took to becoming a Christian is not only still quite fresh, but also still vague and difficult to understand. Only recently have even some of the things that I engaged in as a sinner and a child of the world begun to make sense. However, there is a theme in my testimony, which my dad may have stole from me, but that's okay, which I want to draw upon and give to you in a way that is hopefully humorous and relevant, but above all, I hope you'll agree that it is true. The use of humour is also somewhat of a change for me, especially in a public forum. I tend to be quite serious, but it's been the only way I could get my testimony or a form of it out on paper. I've always struggled with it, so I'm taking a bit of a leap of faith here myself. I hope you enjoy it. Many years ago, my dad pioneered a church in China. Unfortunately, though, where is he? My dad was a proper bogan. And you couldn't tell now, but back then he couldn't speak a word of English, let alone Chinese. But like many a missionary before him, he felt a calling, and his wife and four children left for a world they knew nothing about. And we can rest assured knowing that this mission was of God when, despite my dad's speech impediment of boganism, he managed to learn English and Chinese, mostly Cantonese and even some Mandarin. And he managed to start a church, not get caught by the government in China, and even teach English as a job. So a total miracle, really, and that's how I know that we were supposed to go to China. I am the youngest of four, only a baby when I arrived in China, which is sometimes why I still think I'm Chinese. It's very strange, I know, but just ask my mum. She'll tell you a funny story about how she proved to me I wasn't. Somewhat racist too, she's not careful. I was an amazing kid, and that's being a little bit sarcastic, but mostly it was true. I was a pretty good kid when I was young, and I'll demonstrate through this one story. But I have to set the scene. Back then, in the early 90s, the building quality where we lived was, China is very different. Back then it was pretty poor where we were. We lived in a shabby apartment block. The kitchen design, clearly an afterthought, I still remember it, in its placement was a cockroach laden, my mum will know this, isosceles triangle where you could never quite reach down to the far side of the kitchen bench in the corner. It's just kind of chucked in there. And a place where all of us children slept in one stinky room. A place where all sorts of important cables ran along the outside of the shabby concrete walls of our apartment. You know, speaking to all the males here, sometimes when you're a young boy, you discover something that is wonderful, something life-changing, and something where the only thing that limits what you could do with it is your imagination, a tool of endless possibility and fascination. This tool that was a pair of pliers in the hands of one of my very imaginative older siblings. And we all know that God works in mysterious ways, but when a family has a red-haired child, you know that child is gifted from God with insanity. Well, I have two red-haired siblings, and they were both middle children to make things even worse. My oldest brother and I are the normal ones. I'm not sure if you've all met Reese, but very normal. And you can tell by the colour of my hair. It's pretty normal. Yeah, maybe. however, the two middle children are a total different kettle of fish. Nevertheless, one of my brilliant older siblings took it upon themselves to snip one of the wires that ran down the wall of our shabby concrete apartment. And upon my father's return home, after learning about the incident, we were all promptly lined up in our isosceles-shaped kitchen at the very real threat of death. In a terrible turn of events, the situation had suddenly escalated to such a level that if the child who had cut the telephone line did not step forward, all of us would be smacked. Smacked numerous times. Now, this is a serious punishment when your dad's aim with a cane rod is unbelievably precise. An arm that can place a millimetre precision in six swift whips of the cane on your soft baby cheek bum. Things were very serious indeed. Surely the culprit would stand forward and own his fault and admit his guilt. Well, as the seconds grew longer and my dad's patience shortening, and he also justified his incredulity at how the wires could have snipped themselves in half, the guilty child now fully realized the holes in their plan. Admit the sin, get smacked. Don't do anything, get smacked. Any moment now, I expected we would all get smacked. But then a brilliant idea entered into my mind. I would put up my feeble, innocent little hand and step forward and confess that I did it, even though I was clear of any wrongdoing. I was simply minding my own business. I had not chosen to be born into a family of heathen, red-haired middle children. But time was running out, and in the final moments, in an amazing show of self-sacrificial love for the remaining beloved two out of three yet innocent siblings, I slowly stepped forward. I could see on my dad's face that he didn't believe me. I wasn't even tall enough to cut the line where it was cut. And no one suspected I would have done it, and they were right. But he gave his word that if the guilty party stepped forward, the rest would be spared. So my dad smacked me. And he'll tell you, though, that he took it easy on me. But the scars I bear tell a different tale. Possible exaggeration, yeah. The guilty child was free to go with the innocent because I took the punishment for them all. And one day, many, many years later, when my family was gathered around the dinner table eating, we got talking about this story again. And all of a sudden, the great unsolved mystery was brought to the fore again. And the all-important question arose, so who really cut the wire? And a very wry smile crept upon the face of my still red-haired older brother. He did eventually step forward, just 14 years too late. I tell this story of how great I was that day as a little child, not because I think highly of myself, which can happen on occasion, but because I used to think very highly of myself. Now, this true story, it is true, illustrates a key theme, I think, of Jesus' ministry and work on the cross. And it took me about 15 years to realize that, like my red-headed brother, I was guilty before my Father in heaven. And a long time, even right up until the moment I decided to join Jesus Christ in denying myself, I battled internally with the problem of my conscience. It wasn't necessarily that my deeds were heinous, though some were, but that I knew I was guilty of doing wrong. There were so many things that I could think of that condemned me, whether it was lying or coveting. I realized that I could remain in the darkness alongside the children of the darkness, but the judgment would eventually come to me. Or I could step forward and confess my sins and receive the punishment for them. But what hope was there for me in that? I realized then that there is no point in doing good works if the reason for my doing good works is to try and escape God's judgment. Future good works don't cancel out past sins. Judgment is inevitable. But then I remembered my little act of selflessness as a child, taking the punishment so that my brothers and sister could go free. And in a very simplistic way, my choice that day wasn't much different to Jesus' death on the cross. I remember there was one particular day that it all made sense to me, and I thought, he took the punishment for me. You mean to tell me that all I have to do is admit that I'm a sinner and sincerely ask Jesus to forgive me and then follow him? That's it. Man, it's so simple. Why isn't everyone a Christian? But as the preacher Paris Reedhead said, quote, they love their sin and they want to stay in it. So just like my guilty brother went free when I took his place and I got the smacks, we too can go free, but only if we come to Jesus, admit our sin for which he died, and ask for his forgiveness. God is faithful to forgive us our sins, and God doesn't want to punish us, but he will if we remain disobedient and continue in rebellion against him. And who can we blame but ourselves? I hope you'll enjoy join me in saying that who Jesus is and what he did and how he died and how he lived are all amazing, and that I don't want to be a sinner who loves my sin, but I want to be like Jesus. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this message.
You're welcome to duplicate this message in its entirety for non-profit purposes. For more information and resources, visit cgc.org.au.